Peace with Samantha B. Hopefully you'll experience one by the end of this. Believe it or not, we've crossed the halfway mark of 2021, and touch wood, we appear to be in considerably better shape than we were this time a year ago. That doesn't mean there aren't an endless number of crises for us to be fretting about, but that's what my late night show is for. Here on Full Release, we like to take a deep breath, 6 feet apart, of course, and relax a little bit by talking to a friendly, like-minded guest who'll give us a little inspiration, food for thought. Love food for thought. Now I'm hungry. I'm going to eat all these cherries I have beside me. I ate the pits. We can talk about that later. Today on the show, we're going to have a great guest, progressive activist Charlotte Clymer. But before we get to her, I'm joined by my producers, Sophia Baron-Reinstein and Adam Howard. And I'm told that they have some breaking podcast gal related news for me, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah, this is big news for me personally. This podcast gal is going to be a podcast parent. my wife and I are going to be having a baby in November.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very excited.
I was very nervous to tell you, but I'm also very pleased by your reaction. I don't know, because I'm nervous. It's like, it's scary, but also exciting.
Oh, no. Adam, what? You've ruined everything. Oh, this is upsetting. I can't continue.
Yeah, but anyways, I wanted to thank you, because many, many months ago when we were first prepping this show and doing like a demo, you gave me some really good advice, because
because
we were talking about this, and my wife and I were kind of inching towards making the decision to try to start a family, and you gave me this whole kind of soliloquy about making better humans, and that being kind of a really good way to think about it, and it really did help me a lot, because I had all this anxiety about stuff that isn't really important, but that really helped me kind of get over myself. So thank you.
Oh my goodness, it's my pleasure to. Yeah. I love that
Sam was
happy.
Deeply involved in your baby making process.
Obviously, now I have some
ideas. You weren't like the decision maker, but you influenced me. You were not. No, you influenced me. What do you have some ideas? Is that what you said?
No, ideas for what you should name the baby.
Oh,
the
wow.
Name is Samantha B. Howard. Well, male, actually, female, doesn't matter.
My wife and I have a deal where, I don't know if I've told you this before, but we're keeping, the baby's going to have her last name, and I'm going to choose the first name. So that's going to be kind of our little compromise. And of course, if she really hates my suggestion, like we'll work it out, but it's going to be my call.
This is exciting.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
I feel like that's like all of our decisions then, because we make decisions as a group on this podcast.
That's very true.
Well, this is very exciting. Do you know anything more than the baby's coming in November?
Well, yeah, we know the gender, but we're keeping that to ourselves. And then, yeah, everything is like happy, healthy. Everything's looking
this
good
is
so far.
Great.
We saw the brain the other day, which was pretty frightening.
That's
and crazy.
Nice.
It's amazing what you can do nowadays. But we're getting ready. And we just got through the first trimester.
Oh my god, so. How delightful!
Sam's going to be your baby nurse.
I am, and you're going to get over your fear of vomit.
Yeah, I know there's going to be a lot of vomit.
There's going to be a lot of vomit, but you know what? You'll get over it. It's like what's that? It's like cognitive behavioral therapy. Is that what it is when you like immerse yourself in the thing that you fear the most? That's not the term for it, I don't think.
Yeah, I know what you're saying though. That's going to drive me crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
When you like, you're like, I'm afraid of bridges. So you're
immersion therapy or something?
Yeah. So you
have to immerse
like,
myself in the vomit.
I have a really good friend who's afraid of bridges, and his psychiatrist was like, you have to go on bridges because you're afraid of them. And he went on his first bridge. He was like, I'm going on a bridge. And he passed out.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he fell on the ground.
Oh, my God.
He did.
Is he okay?
He's totally fine.
Yeah.
He's totally fine. And he's obviously still even more terrified of bridges. He went to one and fell down.
So he just walked across a bridge.
He was trying to walk across the bridge. But this was like early on in the process. I don't know what stage the overcoming of the bridge is, but that's a serious, anyway, it won't be like that for you. You'll be fine. Oh my God. This is the best. This is great news. I'm very happy. Okay. On that note, Oh, I'm going to eat some more cherries with their pits intact. And we're going to take a quick break. But we have Charlotte Kleiner coming up. Joining me today is Charlotte Kleiner, a writer, LGBTQ advocate, communications consultant, and military veteran. You probably know her best from her political commentary on Twitter, but she also writes a blog on Substack called Charlotte's Web Thoughts. Most recently, she worked as the director of communications at Catholics for Choice, and prior to that, as a press secretary at the Human Rights Campaign. Her writing has appeared in USA Today, The Washington Post, GQ, numerous other outlets. She has appeared as a guest commentator on CBS Sunday Morning and MSNBC. Last year, she was named to Fortune Magazine's 40 Under 40 list. So honestly, here's hoping she can help me get on a 60 Under 60 list. 60! Oh! She's a proud transgender woman and hails from the great state of Texas. Welcome to the show, Charlotte Kleiner.
Sam, hi. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. It's been too long.
It's been way too long. And thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for inviting me. I'm so excited to chat with you.
Oh my God, me too. I'm really happy to see your face.
Me too. I'm happy to see your face. I wish we were doing this over drinks, but this will do.
I do too. This will happen. I know we have chit-chatted like briefly about actually meeting in person.
Yes.
And going out, and I mean to make this happen. But first, tell me, are you in D.C. right now?
I'm in D.C. proper, yeah.
Okay. Tell me, what is the cicada situation? Have they emerged? Are they clinging? As you look out the window, is it like covered with like red-eyed, creepy creatures?
Yeah, that's what I've been afraid of lately. But at least where I live, they haven't come out quite yet.
Okay.
I have some friends who've snapped pictures. And okay. I've seen a few videos of dogs eating cicadas on walks so far.
Okay.
Which is just delightful because it's exactly what I want to see.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay.
So bug crunchy. Being devoured.
Okay. So. Oh, God. I'm just going to dive right in. Let's do it. Let's get there.
Do it.
All right. Okay. I feel like... the GOP, like I'm like already starting on a horrible note. I'm so sorry. I'm just going to drop it. I'm dropping it.
Yeah.
I feel like their favorite thing to do post 2020, besides, you know, questioning election results, is targeting the trans community.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
especially trans kids with some really choice discriminatory legislation. Why are they doing this? Why?
It's stop? Yeah, it's exasperating to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's horrifying.
It's horrifying. And, you know, I mean, they've been doing this for, it's funny because some news reports I've seen have been like to the effect of GOP focuses attention on trans people as if this happened overnight. But this has been going on for almost a decade now in some way, shape or form.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be bathroom bills, exclusively bathroom bills, right? The one in North Carolina. Then it kind of pivoted to trans people in the military.
Yes.
And now we're at a point where the GOP thinks that they can have a winning political strategy by going after trans children generally, which is wild to watch in real time.
It doesn't feel like a winning strategy to me. Is it a winning strategy? I mean...
No, I mean, I don't think it will be. No. Mm-mm. But the problem is like, we live in an era of disinformation.
Yes.
And we hear that so often tied up with elections.
Mm-hmm.
But marginalized communities are the most directly affected by disinformation, and specifically trans people, because there's so little information in the public about trans healthcare and how trans children receive healthcare in general, you know, how our bodies change, essentially. That's, I think that they're is an opening the GOP sees to take advantage of that lack of knowledge and really weaponize it for elections.
Right. Do you think that Republican politicians have become more hate-filled, or they've just found a larger, different type of megaphone? Because it feels like every hateful person has so much more of a voice. There's something about the internet that is like, it levels the playing field, but it also amplifies voices that are incredibly destructive.
I could not agree more. There's this big question in the so-called discourse over time about whether or not the internet has been a net good or a net bad.
Right.
I don't know the answer to that question, but I will say that social media in particular has been really a mixed bag. And you know, in the larger sense, of course, but specifically in the civil rights sense, you know, in a sense, you know, social media has been good for things like amplifying the systemic racism, police brutality. Me Too, of course, was a big moment. But at the same time, it is so easy for hateful people to spread disinformation instantaneously whenever they feel like it. And again, because there's that lack of information and lack of knowledge, people who want to support trans folks don't have a lot to grab onto.
Right.
So they're like, oh, is that true? Are, you know, are grown men waking up and deciding they're going to go try out for the USA women's softball team? Is that how that's going on right now?
Right.
And it's very hard to stop that day to day, you know.
Back in April, the NCAA released a statement of support for its collegiate trans athletes, which was important. But do those kinds of statements do enough? I mean, the landscape is totally fraught. Or is it just like, it's like just a part of it, just a simple step?
You know, what's strange is that I've talked to a number of journalists so far about this. Several of them have been quite good. You're the first person to ask me specifically about the NCAA statement without being prompted.
Oh, really?
That's kind of the problem.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Me too. Me too. That's so funny. I mean, you're not a journalist. And yet that is the question you led off with. So...
So kudos. I mean, kudos to me.
Kudos to you. No. Well done.
No.
I guess we need more Canadians to become American citizens. And maybe that's how it'll work.
Open those borders.
Open those borders. That's right.
Yeah.
It does help. It does help. Right. I want to say that unequivocally. It does help. But what helps even more are people who support trans rights being confident and unapologetic about supporting trans rights and doing the kind of labor it takes to educate themselves so that they can be very effective in pushing back against that nonsense.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah. I feel like every little bit, every act of support, every time you amplify a voice, it chips away at people's, you know what I mean? Like it.
That's right.
If people are going to bend their brains around something, if they're in an uncomfortable place and they are going to bend their brains around something they never thought about before, they need to see it everywhere. They need
right.
to hear about it. They need to like, it needs to be in their face all the time. Okay. You have called out Caitlyn Jenner for perpetuating transphobia. And you referred to her as the Phyllis Schlafly of the trans community, which is just a reference that I love so much. Do people remember Phyllis Schlafly? But
you know,
I do.
Well, you know, she was before my time, obviously, but it's interesting because a lot of folks my age do know about her. Even,
right.
you know, whether you're liberal or conservative or somewhere in between, you've heard about her because either she's had an enormous influence on your parents or she's now taught in courses on, you know, intro to feminism or you know, she's appearing in, huge productions like the Miss America miniseries.
Right.
So I think a lot of people do know about her now. But I'll tell you, I'm proud of that phrase, but I also think it's inaccurate because Phyllis Schlafly is actually a lot more talented. She was a lot more talented than Caitlyn Jenner ever was, right?
Right.
Brilliant person, you know, had a law school degree, public policy degree, incredibly effective organizer. I can't stand her. I hate her guts, but she was really good at what she did. And Caitlyn Jenner doesn't have a single talented political bone in her body.
Right. And I feel like the potential for her to do so much damage to the discourse is just there for the taking. Like there's so, she makes an impact. She has a lot of people who really like what she's all about and who listen to her. What do you think the impact of her being on that stage and running for governor will be?
Right. So it's hard to explain this to people, but that's I'm so glad you got straight to the core of the issue. Thank goodness. So it doesn't matter if she's unqualified.
Yeah.
What matters right now is that Caitlyn Jenner is one of, if not the most famous openly trans person in the world. And because her name is now synonymous with the trans movement since she came out, cis people who don't know a lot about trans issues. And by the way, for your listeners, cis just means that you're not transgender. So if you're listening to this, there's a 99% chance that you're cis. And, you know, for cis people who don't know anything about trans issues, they think, oh, if Caitlyn Jenner is saying something, it must be true.
Right.
Because she's the most famous trans person in the world. So, so if Caitlyn Jenner comes out and, you know, she does the thing like she told TMZ that, quote unquote, biological boys should not be in women's sports. Mm. Or, you know, she, you know, went on Ellen several years back and said that she wasn't comfortable with same-sex marriage. That kind of thing really, really harms LGBTQ people, but more specifically trans kids who are just trying to survive day to day.
Right, right. And it's indisputable that violence against trans and non-binary people is underreported.
Yes.
It's devastating.
Yes.
In terms of police brutality and domestic abuse. How do we bring it more into the national conversation so that we can actually force people to stop ignoring it? It's a huge problem.
It is. It is. And I think people don't understand the scale of the problem because it's not as reported as it should be.
Right.
You know, so many Democratic leaders are doing a good job of talking about this. You know, President mm-hmm. Biden talked about it in his address to Congress a couple months ago, but it's not being talked enough about journalists. During the presidential debates last year, in the first four, I believe, there were no LGBTQ questions.
Okay.
None. In the None. First four. Yeah. The first four Democratic primary debates. None.
Right.
And finally, Yemi Chalcindor in the fifth one asked about violence against trans people. Mm-hmm. And that one question, and it was very brief. I think, you know, Senator Sanders answered, then Senator Warren answered, and that was it. It was no more than 2.5 minutes, but it generated so much conversation about the topic. Mm-hmm. And I keep thinking, just imagine if 60 Minutes did a 5-minute segment on violence against trans people,
right.
How fast that would generate really great information and support for trans people who face this violence. But
right.
In order to engage the public, you have to have a proactive media. And I think unless it's something glamorous or, I don't know how to put it the right way, entertaining to some extent, like Caitlyn Jenner running for governor of California,
right.
Most of the media doesn't care about trans issues.
Right, right, right.
They don't.
How relieved would you say you were when the election results came in for President Biden? Like how, what was that feeling like for you? Can you even, I can't even really remember. I just think I was numb and my feet got numb. Like they, I was like, I just had a full body, just a full body release. Like actually it was for me, the inauguration, because we had to get past, you know, the insurrection yeah. And all of that was crazy. But on inauguration day, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe we made it. Did you feel that way?
I felt good. It took about a week until mm-hmm. after the election for me to feel really good. Mm-hmm. The night of the election, I was terrified.
Right.
Absolutely terrified. And I was trying to be confident publicly so people wouldn't, you know, lose themselves. But mm-hmm. I just couldn't do 4 more years of that.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think it would have ended there.
We came so close. We came yeah. so close to having 4 more years of that. There are so many people in this country who wanted 4 more years.
Yeah.
And we don't need to like dwell on that all for the entirety of this podcast. But I can't believe when I think about how close we came, and I believe we did, I start to sweat from every pore of my body.
Me too. And, you know, it's interesting because I've been following politics all my life, American mm-hmm. politics.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can see the patterns or I can, you know, there are points where I'm like, okay, we're going to be all right. And I knew we were going to be okay 2 days after, but it wasn't like the relief didn't like go away for me. What scares me though, is that on the other side of that coin is that you can see things coming down the road.
Right.
And so now it feels like a lot of us are complacent. A lot of Americans are complacent. And I'm now more scared than I was a week after the election,
mm-hmm.
to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And it's because 2022 really represents the critical, I know people are tired of hearing this, but it really does represent the critical turning point for our country. Like if we don't hold the House and Senate in 2022, mm-hmm. everything we've done up to this point is all for naught.
Yes.
It really is.
It is actually amazing how I was just speaking to somebody yesterday about this, about how when you say the word midterms, people's really intelligent people whose ideas you really respect, their eyeballs glaze over. They're like, do not do this to me. Just like a curtain falls across the conversation. Nobody wants to hear the word midterm, but it is like, this train is coming into the station. Like, it is happening. It is not that far away. It's about 18 months away.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. November 2022. Yeah. And I think, I think people are scared. And what I would tell them is, we can absolutely win this. We really can. But it's going to take more effort on the parts of all of us. And I know people are so tired of hearing that. They have 9-to-5 jobs. They have kids.
Yeah.
They have so many things, other things to worry about than an election. But really, this election affects every single one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to, citizenship is a proactive endeavor. You got to keep on it, or else it gets out of your way. Republicans, they don't give a shit. They will go vote at the most local elections consistently without fail.
Right.
Which is why they dominate school boards, why they dominate, statewide offices. They are so good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats are not so good at that.
How do you make it more sexy? How do you make it more exciting? We need more giveaways. If we just we say this all the time at the show, if we just gave people a coupon for a burrito, people would fucking stampede to the polls in the midterms.
You'd be like, a card for Taco Bell or some shit.
I swear to God, everybody just wants something that worth $2 that's free. Everybody's like, I'll do it. I'm hungry. Let's go vote.
If the GOP figures this out and they're like, okay, we're going to give a free gun to every Republican that registers to vote, it's over for us.
It's over. It's over. Oh my God. Oh yeah. Don't even. Oh.
That's scary.
Okay. What do you think will stop the next, God forbid, okay, I'm saying it, Republican president from just simply reversing Biden's reversal of Trump's ban on trans people serving in the U.S. military?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I mean,
this is.
Yeah. Listen, and it's very important that all your listeners know this. Unless Congress mm-hmm. passes a law that protects things like LGBTQ rights, the right to keep ways, mm-hmm. Addresses systemic racism and police brutality, these things that Biden has done so far are all by executive order. And so, unless there's a way to safeguard that with congressional protection and fight out in the courts, which is a whole other story,
mm-hmm.
the next person, whether it's Josh Hawley or Ron DeSantis, they can just come in and they can undo it all on day one. And they will. They absolutely will do that.
Right. Is there any chance the Equality Act could pass with bipartisan support? How far away? Bipartisan support, are we?
I think we're only a couple votes short.
Mm-hmm.
Now we don't have an official tally yet. Senator Schumer has released something saying we're at 57 or 58 votes, but we need 60.
Right.
So we need, our Manchin, who's a moderate, and Sinema will vote for it, but we need Manchin as a moderate, and then we need 10 Republican votes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we might have 6 or 7 right now.
Okay.
Here's our strength, though. Some of these Republican senators live in states and they're coming up for re-election, and they have to tell their voters why they voted against one of the most popular pieces of legislation in modern history. Mm-hmm. Because the Equality Act is supported by more than 70% of Americans. A ton of businesses, clergy have come out in support of it. Across the board, mm-hmm. people are like, let's just forget about this issue. Let's put it to bed because we're so, we have kids to feed. We're not worried about who's having sex with who, or what they're doing to their bodies. Just they're adults, let them be. But, until you have them on record opposing it, you can't weaponize that against Republican people who stand in the way of progress. And Schumer, mm-hmm. I think, Senator Schumer is trying to figure out what the best timing is for bringing the bill to a vote in a way that is most advantageous to the movement overall. I get it. I really do. But he has to shit or get off the pot.
Okay.
It's time to bring it forward.
Okay. Even if we don't.
Even if we don't.
Abolish the filibuster.
Yeah, right. I mean,
I
think the odds of, I mean, the odds of us killing the filibuster are very slim. I'm still calling for it. You know, everyone, everyone should be calling their senators and telling them that.
Sure.
But the odds of us, the odds of Manchin agreeing to nuke the filibuster are very, very slim.
How do you, how many, I know like we do tons of calls to action on my show and I know you do it too. It's like, it's a very important part of your civic, you know, civic engagement. How often do you think people actually write letters? They have so much value. I think that letter writing is very nerdy and important.
Oh my goodness. You know, it's funny. I've been asked that question more than a couple of times. And my answer to people is, I know that you're tired of hearing that because you think that you send an email or a letter or you call your or you call your senators or a member of Congress's office and it just goes into the ether. But it doesn't. I swear to God, there are staffers who read your letter, read your email, take your phone call, and they're like, hey, boss, you know, we had 10 people call today about this piece of legislation. I think that's probably a little important. And they do respond.
They do. They really do. I mean, as you know, I grew up in Canada and I had a friend. This is like a very, I'm going to make this story as short as possible, but he worked in advertising and he worked on an ad campaign for like a beer, like Molson or something, like Labatt, our big like Canadian brewery companies. And they did a commercial campaign that offended people on some ridiculous level. Like it was like a nothing, a complete nothing. And 10 people wrote letters. Like, I mean, it was under 15 the number of letters that they received, and they killed the whole campaign because they were like, 10 letters? People really hate this, because to them, the 10 letters represented a multiple thousand people who hated it but were too lazy to write the letters. Letters matter.
They do.
I just got myself a, just like a whole supply of stamps to write my angry missives over the summer.
I love it. Do it. Do it. Write to your senator. Your senators are Gillibrand and Schumer, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, they're amazing. Yep. They're great. Yep.
Tap, 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 tap.
I got a typewriter. I did the most cliche shit in the world and got as a writer and got a typewriter. I love it. Oh,
That's great. What a great feeling.
And it's very physical too. Yeah, it's like a workout.
Physical.
Oh, but I love it.
Yeah. Oh my God. My grandmother was a secretary at a Catholic school where I went to school.
Oh my God.
And she was an incredible typist. Like she just never looked at the keys. It was just like tippity tap all the time. Tippity tap, writing letters. So it's like very visceral.
And it's only for letter writing, by the way. I don't like write on it because that would be psychotic.
Oh no.
Yeah. You have to imagine.
And correcting your typos is just like a whole art. That's just a completely otherworldly.
In the 50s, I can't do that.
Okay, I'm going back in. All right, you were in the military for many years. As you've said, the military is a bellwether for equality. What do you mean when you say that?
So over American history, change in wider society has been preceded by change in the military. Mm-hmm. Whether it was integration of the armed forces coming before Brown v. Board of Education, or the women being permitted to serve in the military, which preceded mm-hmm. the women's liberation movement. You know, the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell came before the legalization of same-sex marriage. On and on and on, you can see, you know, across the board, really, that it is much easier to affect change in wider society when the military does it first. Because people see that and they're like, well, these people are serving our country. Of course they deserve equality in our country overall. Mm-hmm. It's so much easier to make that argument. But also what's interesting is that the military, I think, really does represent in most American minds the epitome of what we'd like to be. Now, mm-hmm. we can talk about colonialism and all those other fun topics. I totally get that. But let's mm-hmm. focus here for a second. You know, the thing is that we've been so conditioned to implicitly trust the military. And I do trust our military. Mm-hmm. But the more we go down that road, the easier it is to affect wider change when we focus on military culture. And I really wish that more progressives would really grasp that concept. Mm. Our way to wider change is doing it in the military and using military arguments. So, you know, you want to talk about universal healthcare, talk about how the military has done it successfully.
Right.
It's not perfect, right. But mm-hmm. it's a pretty damn good system for its size, right?
Right, right. It's huge.
It's huge. Public housing, you know, the fact that housing in the military is free right. for most service members. All these things can be done on a national level when we look at how successfully they've been implemented in our military. And I wish more folks would grasp that.
Is there more you'd like to see the VA do to destigmatize mental health?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, a lot more. I mean, we're getting there. I think what I found really heartening over the past 10 years and 15 years is that a lot of my friends who have deployed and come back with something akin to PTSD have, you know, gotten a much warmer reception and resources than was possible probably 15, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So change is being made, but it's not fast enough.
Right.
Veterans still commit suicide at alarming rates. The veterans are still homeless at alarming rates. And so, you know, what I would say to Secretary McDonough and any other person who's working in the VA that might be listening is that, you know, we already have veterans groups who've studied this intensely. And so it's really important that you go to the veterans groups, whether it's Vote Vets or, you know, any of the of these other organizations, and really talk to them about what change is needed at the micro level, not just the macro systemic level, but the day-to-day experiences of veterans. Now, I will say this, I go to the Washington, D.C. VA Center, and I've only had good experiences, which is great.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of veterans have had very different experiences. And so it's important to listen to them and see what change needs to be made.
You've been very outspoken about being a person of faith. Why do you think so many progressive religious people, people of faith, are overshadowed by their right-wing peers? Why do they get to own that?
Oh, gosh. So, this is going to be... I could talk for 5 hours about this, so I'll try to condense it.
Don't know. We can do it.
Okay.
5 hours.
We can do 5 hours. That's fine.
Come on.
Just a couple, a few kids. It's fine. It's wonderful. I think that progressive people of faith are magnitudes better at embracing nuance.
Mm.
And generally speaking, not always, but generally speaking, people who are in religious circles don't want to fucking hear about nuance. They want the answers.
Right.
They, you know, do you remember sitting in like an undergrad philosophy class and the professor was introducing you to all the different theories, you know, from Hegel to whatever the hell. And there, I remember getting the sense of frustration, like, just give me the damn answers. I don't want you to waffle. Like, you clearly, like, just tell me. I mean, you're literally an expert in philosophy. Tell me what you live by. The professor was always like, well, it's interesting because it could be this or it could be that, and we don't really know. And I mean, that's a perfectly valid answer, but it doesn't give a lot of comfort to people who are anxious and uncertain. And there is certainly a far higher rate of anxious and uncertain people in religious circles than non-religious circles, for obvious reasons, I think. Mm-hmm. They're not looking for someone to give them the multifaceted viewpoint. They're looking for someone to tell them everything's going to be okay, and here's how it's going to be okay.
Oh boy. Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. We talk a lot on the show, and you talk a lot about this, and it's true that representation matters, obviously. When was the first time that you felt represented, you know, or you saw yourself in the media or the public sphere?
Oh,
did
gosh.
That happen for you? Are you still waiting for that moment, or did that happen for you?
I think it has happened for me to some extent. You know, my friends, Danica Rome and Sarah McBride, have given me a tremendous amount of strength. For Sarah McBride, it was back in 2013 when I was still 4 years away from coming out. Mm-hmm. Sarah came out when she was president of the student government at American University. It was near graduation, and she wrote this open letter in the student newspaper saying that, you know, I'm a trans woman and here's what that means. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly, I mean, I know the word brave is used a lot in these conversations, but it was incredibly brave and made national news. And I will always, always be grateful to Sarah for that, because she really kickstarted a certain kind of conversation that wasn't at the celebrity level.
Right.
We've had amazing women who have spoken out, amazing trans people overall, you know, Laverne Cox, Janet Mock, Chaz Bono. These are great people who have really educated the public. But I do think that there is a tendency among some people to believe that sometimes being trans is either extremely rare or it's a celebrity thing, like some kind of trendy youth thing, which is not at all true. For someone like Sarah, who is this not buttoned up. Well, yeah, I guess buttoned up. I mean, she is a very progressive buttoned up person. And for her to come out and tell her story so effectively, I remember reading that in 2013 as this closeted 24, 25 year old and just feeling like someone got me. And I would meet Sarah later. We became friends and she's been wonderful to me. And I'll tell you the second moment, 2017, the Virginia elections, Danica Rome becomes the first openly trans person to be elected a state senator in American history. And oh gosh, I cried so much that night.
Oh, that's great.
And then I came out 3 weeks later.
Wow.
Yeah.
What does Pride Month mean to you? Is it too commercialized, too commodified?
What a question.
I mean, it's a huge, I like to drop questions that are impossible to answer in 10 sentences.
No, I love it. That's a great question. If you had to ask, I don't know, that's probably up there in the top one or two or three questions that will most start an argument among LGBTQ people.
Okay.
About what Pride should be. Because there are some LGBTQ folks who believe that Pride should be as anodyne as possible, right? Mm-hmm. That you have your little shirts and you have your float and people show up and you might drink a little bit and you dance to the YMCA and then you go home. We're just like you. We're all just like you, you know?
Right.
And look, I get the appeal of that because it's safe and it's just interesting the way that people grasp onto that sense of safety. But the problem with that is that we get into this weird cycle of the wider public believing that LGBTQ people are only one type of person. And that one type of person, and God bless them, I have nothing against them, is typically a cis gay white male who is typically upper middle class. Like that is the, you know, like Will out of Will and Grace. Like that is still the enduring model of what an LGBTQ person is. And people judge who I absolutely adore and love. I think he's wonderful. Through no fault of his own, he's kind of reinforced that narrative. Again, he did nothing wrong except running for president on a wonderful platform. And he has kind of reinforced that. And so there's a lot of conversations going on right now among people who are pretty angry that they feel like Pride has become more of a commercial enterprise than centering the struggles that LGBTQ people still encounter. And I'll go to this real quick. There was a poll that was taken a couple of years ago by Reuters and asked two questions. The first one was, do you support LGBTQ federal protections? And then the second question was, do LGBTQ federal protections exist? Now, the good news is that, you know, again, more than like 70%, even as much as 75% of Americans, including half are Republicans, support LGBTQ protections at the federal level. The bad news is that about half of Americans believe these protections already exist, and they don't.
Right.
Marriage was such a small part of the overall pie, and the military was such a small part of the overall pie. And I think once Windsor came down, the Supreme Court case on same-sex marriage, and once Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, most cisgender heterosexual people thought, oh, so that's it. It's over.
Right. We did it. That was nice.
Yeah, that was great. I love it.
That was great.
All done. Pride flag and let's go have some fun, you know? And
right.
I get it. I do. Like, I completely get why they would think that. I don't think they're at fault. But it's enormously frustrating to those of us who are not upper middle class cis white gay men who are still seeing ourselves relentlessly attacked by conservatives who are seeing our bodies and gay men still are attacked, don't get me wrong, but the you know, as you cited, the ongoing epidemic of violence against trans people has reached a fever pitch. So for example, we just reached the point where there are as many murders of trans people this year as there were 2 years ago. So in all of 2019,
wow.
In all of 2019, we've already reached that point in late May.
That's frightening. That's a frightening statistic. That's horrifying.
It's horrific. And so, you know, yeah, I want to go to Pride and just have a good time, but people also need to understand that Pride started as a protest.
Right.
It started as a way to identify the core issues of what LGBTQ people are going through. And instead of being worried about whether or not Wells Fargo was going to pull their sponsorship because you have a trans person wearing assless chaps, you should be more worried about what that trans person faces when no one is hiring them because they're trans,
right.
When people are turning them away from housing or credit or jury service. You know, all these things are important, and they're far more important than whether or not Wells Fargo is going to cut a check for us.
Right, right. I know a lot of the people who are listening to this podcast follow you on social media, follow you on Twitter, love you, you know, think you're amazing. But how do you, because you're fierce and you're super fearless, how do you hold your own, how do you hold on to yourself amid the toxic voices on that platform? How do you protect yourself?
I drink a lot.
Okay. do you protect yourself?
I do. Look, you know, I mean, honestly, I look at women like you who have been in the public eye for, God, 2 decades now, because you started The Daily Show, 2003, I think it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've been doing this for 18 years, and I can't even begin to imagine the level of hate mail you've gotten over that time. I mean, you've gotten death threats, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Every prominent woman in the public gets that kind of hatred, whether it's death threats or stalkers or having themselves doxed. You know, I've had, mm-hmm. I still have people at least every couple of weeks who dox my cell phone.
Right.
Or know where I live. You know, and
yes, you can always tell when somebody's mentioned you on the Daily Caller or something like that. There's always just like a flurry of activity.
Flurry. Yes.
A flurry. You're like, oh shit, what happened? Who said what now?
Confetti of hatred. Yes.
Confetti. Yes. How do you, I mean, you have to, it's hard to create an impermeable barrier when part of your work is engaging with people. And you're always on these platforms. How do you protect the shell of yourself?
Yeah, no, I do two things. Number one is I set very strong boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I can't do everything, and no one person can do everything. Mm-hmm. And by the way, no one's asking me to do everything either.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes you'll get an email from someone who needs help and you'll do the best you can. But sometimes, like, you literally just don't have time.
Right.
You can't do it.
Right.
The other thing I do is I make sure that I have a supportive network of friends around mm-hmm. me. I can, you know, like every weekend I will go detox essentially with a group of friends.
Great.
This past weekend, you know, it was about 7 or 8 girlfriends of mine. We sat in a hot tub and drank beer and just talked about life in general. And it was wonderful. And unless you constantly have that kind mm-hmm. of support system, you know, it's really going to eat away at you. And I'll be honest, I mean, I'm not going to mention anyone specifically because that would be really mean, but you can tell that there are advocates who, oh gosh, it's eating away at them way too much. And
right.
you want to hug them and just tell them, you don't have to do everything. Take care of yourself, because if you're not taking care of yourself, you're no good to anyone else.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, this has been incredible. This has been so fun. Okay. This is my last question. This is my last question for you. And it is definitely the most important question that we have.
I'm excited.
That I'm going to ask you. It's huge.
Huge.
Are you going to be one of the next hosts of The View? Can you be? Can you please? Can you please be? Can we make that? Can we materialize that? What is, what's the word? Can we just put it out there? I want to manifest this.
I'm going to have you on as a guest. Wouldn't that be great? Can you imagine?
Just change the whole
thing. I love it. That'd be so great.
My God. It would be incredible.
I would love that, but no one knows my father.
Okay. Oh, I know. That's a shame.
No one knows my father. And so that's where it ends, I guess, for Charlotte Clymer on The View.
Main qualification.
I will right say, there. I think Meghan McCain probably has a good heart, but she has some really terrible people around her.
She does not have a good team.
She does not have a good team. Her husband's an asshole. I'll just put that out there. He heads up the Federalist. And I really hope she finds some peace. And I hope she understands that she doesn't have to do all this nonsense to stay relevant. Like, just be a good person. I really believe that Meghan McCain can be a good person who lives a great life, but she has to believe it herself first. And I'm not sure she does.
Yeah, figure out your moral compass. If you just have a compass inside you, you can pretty much, it will direct you.
That's right.
It really does a lot of interior. It does all the work for you.
Look at Sam B. Sam B has a refined GPS work for
you.
Her.
Set it and forget it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Oh, actually, I have one more question. When you eat cherries, do you also eat the pit? I do.
What?
Oh, okay. Never mind. I didn't ask.
No, ask that. Tell me more. You eat the pit?
Yes. This is an ongoing conversation I've been having all day.
First of all, you eat cherries with pits. That's so interesting to me.
Yeah. Don't they all have, they don't take them out for you.
The maraschino.
Oh, no. Like the cherry, like fresh cherries.
The actual fresh cherry. Yeah.
Like the actual, I always eat the pits because I'm too lazy to spit them out. And I think it's, I don't like carry around a spittoon.
I grew up in Central Texas in trailer parks, mm-hmm. and I always thought cherries were just like the maraschino. And so imagine my surprise when I grew up and I moved to DC. Mm-hmm. I found out that there are actually cherries actually have pits in them. I never knew that. And so do people actually eat the seed inside?
I don't think they do. I think it might just be me. In Canada, I thought that olives had pimentos. I was like, what? What's wrong with this olive? There's a hard part. I think I got one with a tooth in it.
Oh, no.
And yeah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Please be careful. Yeah. Like, we need you, Sam. We need you. I don't think you understand that. Like, we really do need you. So
no.
Just be careful.
We need you.
Oh, we need you.
And we did this.
And by the way, I am so grateful that you're a citizen of our country now. Canada is just... an embarrassment of riches, and we need some great people. And I'm so glad that you're over here now. You and your hubby.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you so much. All right. This was awesome.
Thank you
again. Mwah. I hope you have a great date. Mwah. I'm going to eat a cherry now.
I love it.
Now I'm not going to eat it. Now I'm not even going to chew it.
Oh, God.
Now I'm just going to eat it. Swallow
it whole. I'm so worried about
you. Like a snake.
Oh, my God.
I gotta squeeze in another quick break here. Okay, that was great.
I really enjoyed
talking to her. Oh,
she's awesome.
That was great. I feel like I didn't even have the heart to tell her that you also swallow your gum.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
What?
I'm
you
too
swallow
lazy.
Swallow your gum?
I do.
Always?
Stomach acid is like battery acid. It breaks it all down into cyanide. Okay. All right.
We are so grateful mm-hmm. for voices like Charlotte's on Twitter.
She's
and
awesome.
So grateful that Donald Trump's is gone.
Oh.
And now even his own janky fake Twitter website called From the Desk of Donald J. Trump, I'm sure you were a regular visitor, is shut down too. But it did produce some real gems, like when he called a horse a junkie or when he freaked out about the Academy Awards being called the Oscars and
right.
much, much more.
Wait, why did he complain that the Academy Awards are called Oscars? What was the complaint?
That was
because
the one
it's
I was
undignified.
Yes, exactly. I was obsessed with that one because he really was upset and as if he had just found out that they were calling it the Oscars.
What? Remember when he wore overalls and did a Green
yes,
Acres thing
yes.
on the Emmys?
Brutal.
What is dignity to Donald Trump?
Exactly.
It's meaningless.
Yes.
Okay.
So
all right.
Anyway, as a farewell, here are a few excerpts from his diatribes,
okay.
and we want you to guess who or what he's referring to in the spots we've left blank.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Stick with blank. Mm-hmm. She is a great actress, loved by so many people, and a true original. She is also strong and smart. Many millions of people greatly appreciate her support of our country. Thank you, blank. You are truly appreciated.
Actress who he
loved
likes.
By so many.
Loved by so many. Can I get a hint?
Sure. Mm-hmm. You probably also were a fan of this person, but recently they have become kind of disturbing with their political views.
Oh. I need more of a hint than that.
Okay,
so many
big,
people have become
big, yeah,
disturbing.
Sorry. They were a big television star in the 80s.
A big television star.
In the early 90s.
Early 90s. Oh, God. I'm so bad at this. Is it?
They were in the Look Who's Talking franchise.
Oh, Kirstie Alley.
Yes,
oh, yes. That makes
stick
sense.
Stick with Kirstie Alley.
Oh, right. My. Stick with... She also has a religion to tell you about. Is that a religion? She's got a few pamphlets in her mouth. All right.
Okay. Everyone is so tired of watching blank on Fox News. He has played the game for decades, but all he and his buddies want to do is take your money and run. He's totally ineffective and does not represent the MAGA movement in any way, shape, or form.
Oh. Oh. Interesting.
Let me know if you want a hint. Or...
I do.
So this is somebody who's like an arch conservative, but I wouldn't go so far as to say they're a never Trumper, but they have frequently, you know, gone on Fox News and been slightly critical of Trump. So of course they're
so it's not like a Mitt Romney. That's not a
No. This is a really
it's like a
bad
behind
person.
The scenes person.
A really, really bad person. There's so many.
He's the kind of person that we used to think was like the worst person in the world, and then like Stephen Miller happened. So he was like the Stephen Miller of the Bush administration, if that helps you.
Oh, that doesn't. You have to spell it out. Who is it? Just tell me.
It's Karl Rove.
Karl Rove. Really?
Yeah.
Karl Rove. Wow. Yeah. Interesting.
He is Karl totally Rove ineffective.
He is.
And he has played the game for decades.
But, well, this is not wrong.
Yeah, sometimes Trump is weirdly right.
Even a broken clock. As
yeah, every
say.
Once in a while.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. What's the next one? I'm very bad at these. I don't follow who Trump likes and dislikes, except that he disliked me, but he doesn't remember me now. Okay.
Blank is a bitter, horrible human being. I watched her yesterday and realized how bad she is for the Republican Party. She has no personality or anything good having to do with politics or our country.
Oh, it must be What's-Her-Face Cheney.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. That one.
What's-Her-Face Cheney?
What's-Her-Face Cheney?
All right.
And I was pulling these, I would say like a good 3/4 of his posts are just Liz Cheney hate posts. He was really on a tear.
Right. I was like, I know it's the Cheney one. Oh, he was like, is her name Donna? That's where I'm at this morning. Donna Cheney.
Okay. This is my favorite one. Happy blank to all. It will all come back bigger and better and stronger than ever before. Do not worry.
What?
Yeah. So obviously it's some kind of an event. So happy blank. It's a holiday. I'll give
it's
you
a
that.
It's a holiday that you celebrate.
I celebrate it.
With your family.
These hints are getting pretty.
I do? Shoot. What do I
in
celebrate
May.
With?
With
in
May.
With your children.
What do I celebrate in May? Memorial Day?
I know you love the troops, but this is about your role as a part of your family.
Oh,
with your
Day.
There you go.
Got it. Wow, I'm really swift today. It's all
no
those
worries.
Cherry pits.
I just love that he is saying Happy Mother's Day, and then he's suggesting that it's been gone.
Yeah, Happy he's Mother's Day. This country sucks, but one day it'll be back.
Don't worry.
All right, last one. What blank... blank and blank have done is a total disgrace and an embarrassment to our country. Free speech has been taken away from the president of the United States because the radical left lunatics are afraid of the truth, but the truth will come out anyway, bigger and stronger than ever before.
More bigger and stronger.
Junky horses. Okay, I guess Twitter and Facebook.
Yes.
And YouTube.
Yes.
YouTube.
Yeah, it was
you got
Google.
It all.
It was Google.
Oh, Google.
But yeah. Same difference.
I heard Google.
Yeah, same difference.
I heard
about
GoogTube. Oh, yeah. That's nice. Lunatic left. He's terrific. I really miss them. Oh, my God. I can't even listen to, like, his cadence is so alarming. Anyway, I'm really grateful that no one's going to his stupid
that makes
website.
Me very happy.
That makes me really happy watching it wither on the vine, as they say. All right, everyone. Well, I hope you liked this podcast. If you did, let us know in the comments. If you didn't, I don't know. You could just stop letting us know in the comments if you want. Or you can consider hate listening in the future. Let this podcast enter your ears and irritate you. It's just as good to us. Anyway, seriously, though, please rate, review, and subscribe. Subscribing. I can't stress how important that is. To full release in Apple Podcasts. Keep sending your questions to full release at samb.com. They might even be featured in a future episode. Tune in to Full Frontal with Samantha Bee Wednesdays, 10:30 p.m. on TBS. And if you, God damn it, if you need more Sam B, there's always additional full release on Stitcher Premium. We'll see you next Tuesday for another full release. This podcast is brought to you by Earwolf and TBS and was produced by Adam Howard and Svea Baron-Reinstein, with research provided by Noreen Malik and IT and technical production provided by High Tech. It was edited by Julia Fott and hosted by me, Samantha Bee. We don't need to talk about this, but I just realized that I was just snacking on cherries, and I eat the pits. Do you guys eat the pits?
Isn't that very dangerous?
Mm-mm. I've done it all my life.